This week on The Droids, do we even need a promo? You have to listen to this episode. It's Mandalorian Chapter 13, The Jedi. That's it. This is The Droids.
Grogu.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan, Chris, and Sam, we are here. I am Mike, and there's so much to say, so much to talk about Chapter 13 of The Mandalorian, The Jedi, Ahsoka Tano. I can't even, there's so many thoughts rattling through my brain. Yeah. Guys, let's just dive in. Yeah. The cold open to begin with. We talked about it. Ryan, yeah. I was right there with you. We thought we were going to see a silhouette at the end of an episode, but instead...
I was so close to being right. Yes. If we had seen a silhouette of her at the end of the last episode, I would have been completely right.
Yeah.
But I love that they didn't decide to tease it that way, and they're just like, here she is. Yep. Here
exactly.
she is.
I was shocked. A lot of us without kids get up early and just watch The Mandalorian immediately because we have no other responsibilities. And I turned it on. I was sitting next to my wife, and they showed that shot, and I just went, "What? There she is." I just went, "There. Oh, there she is."
You spit your coffee that's out it. All over everyone.
I just want to get this out up front. This is, and granted, I haven't seen the new season of Clone Wars, so notwithstanding. This is my favorite piece of Star Wars content that's come out since The Last Jedi.
Wow.
Yes.
Like bar none by a wide margin.
Yes. Right in the same boat with you that I haven't seen all of Clone Wars, but yes.
To me felt like when you watch the fan films and there's like a really good one and you're like, oh man, I wish this was actually like Star Wars canon. Like I wish this was... I'm not knocking any of the fan films. I think they're all great, but they're all...
I think you might be knocking Dave Filoni a bit, calling it just a fan film.
Well, no, I'm saying that as a tribute. I mean, he's a fan. Like, he made the ultimate fan film. Like, this is the scenario you want to see.
Did anyone else have this feeling, like, halfway through the episode? I didn't... I don't like to look up who directed or wrote the episodes until the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Halfway through this episode, I was like, well, there's one person who could have written this. And there's probably one person who could have directed it.
I felt the same way.
Yep.
I felt the same. I was actually part of the way through, and I was like, well, there's no way that Favreau wrote this, and thank goodness we're not getting a Favreau-written episode.
Right.
I didn't know if it was for sure Filoni who directed this, mostly because he's only directed, two live-action episodes last season.
Yeah.
I felt like that faded away, didn't have any concerns about his directing ability on live-action after this.
It was phenomenal. Like, it felt like some of the best episodes of The Clone Wars. He used all the tricks and tools that he did in Clone Wars and applied them to the scenario perfectly.
I watched it twice already. I'm still buzzing. Like, I was buzzing afterwards. It was so exciting.
Which is what kind of is incredible to me, and we're going to talk about the details of the episode, the story that plays out here. It's kind of incredible to think that the four of us did not grow up with Ahsoka Tano. We didn't have it as something that we are all catching up on the Clone Wars even now. Mm-hmm. And what it means to those people who have been fans of that character for so long, that not only did they bring her to life in live action, that they brought her to life in an incredibly well-executed manner with Rosario Dawson playing the role and... it not like seeming to drop off in terms of even the execution of the movement of the character and the way that the action played out compared to the cartoon. I don't know what emotions people who have grown up with Ahsoka Tano are feeling watching that. I would love to hear from you. Droidspod@gmail.com, Twitter Droidspod, Facebook, Instagram Droidspod. Find us. Let us know what you think about Ahsoka being brought to life, because I'm ready for the Ahsoka spinoff. With Rosario Dawson. If this is any sort of a pilot for that, if Disney has any sense, you take away from this is like, book that now.
Mike, I had the same exact emotional response where I love Ahsoka, and she's a character who came into my life later.
Yeah.
And acknowledging that she is so many people's, like, she is their Star Wars character.
Yeah, she's their gateway.
I said to my wife when she showed up after that first cold open... I was like, so many people watching this right now are crying because of how uncompromised this depiction
mm-hmm.
is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, first off, they got the actress that everyone wanted to play her. And we'll get more into this as we talk about the episode. Her depiction is so perfect.
Mm.
It's crazy in terms of how well they captured... We'll get into the details of it, but how well they captured it. And I just kept thinking about how much this means. If it means this much to me, and mm-hmm. Ahsoka's fairly new to my life,
yeah.
I can't imagine what it means to people who grew up with her, who have been waiting for this moment for so long. Yeah. I was looking at Twitter last night. I guess people found out that this was going to be the episode she was in. I didn't know for sure. But last night on Twitter, people were doing like countdowns, you know, like pictures of themselves in cosplay or like holding to a lightsaber saying like, "Happy Ahsoka Eve, like I'm staying up until 2 a.m. to watch the episode when it drops." This was such a huge deal for people, and that is like so contagious. Just knowing how much it means to people and like how exciting it was for me who didn't even grow up with her.
Yeah.
So
I just gotta say, Grogu Gaga. I am Gaga for this episode.
I love it.
I loved I mean, you guys have already covered, I mean, you've already said a lot of the things that hit me so hard. I thought they might like just go for it and like confidently reveal her right from the off, because I was like, I think the show might find some strength by doing mm-hmm. that rather than like teasing her more mm-hmm. and so I thought the cold open was great. Mike, you also hit on something. I was wary from the beginning when they announced that they were going to kind of introduce Jedi into the Mandalorian. I mean, you can go back and listen to us and so many people talking about the reason the Mandalorian worked in season one was because it eschewed the Jedi mm-hmm. and like focused on like the fringe characters and the scoundrels and bounty hunters and blah blah blah. And it's like, nuh-uh. Cause
save that for Solo 2, right?
But I was but I was a little anxious because you know, so much of the joy of the Jedi in, you know, the Skywalker saga gag is that it's like, it's so well executed. The, you know, particularly like the lightsaber mm-hmm. duels from the prequels onward have been so great and so well choreographed that it's like, are they really going to pull that off on TV? Mm-hmm. And it's like, holy heck, they did. It looked so incredible. I so bought in. This was so Star Wars. I so bought into her movement, the Jedi powers that were on display. They gave us so much depth and like lore and history in the way that we talked about liking in the second episode of this season, where it's like, it's in there if you see it. It's mm-hmm. in there if you want it. But the episode, I think, works anyway. And mm-hmm. like, if you don't know her history with Anakin, it still works. But holy heck, did that moment. Crush.
I think, and this is
anyway,
what, this is where
I'm, I'm with you, Ryan. I'm buzzing. I've only watched it once, but I've been literally bouncing off the walls all
this
day.
This is where I think the genius of Dave Filoni is, and have now watching, getting deeper into the Clone Wars, it's like so evident throughout that. He manages to, as like a creative force in this show, you know, if you look at the last episode where they introduce that hologram where they say we're trying to get the M blood, the midichlorians essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Filoni has managed to take things that people have such problems with. Like, I don't have a problem with the midichlorians. I don't think it takes the mystery out of the Force. You still have to deal with the idea of how people communicate them, how they train to communicate them,
Some of us disagree, but yeah.
Sure. But I think what Dave Filoni does so beautifully is that he has he takes the midichlorian aspect of this, like in the last episode and taking the blood out of Grogu. And this episode also was so steeped in the magic of that kind of spiritual mystery of the Force. And that idea that the Force is a choice. The line mm-hmm. that really like sprung my imagination in this was when she says, just let his powers fade as he gets older.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this idea that like the Force is a choice you make. You may have midichlorians in your blood that make you predisposed to be able to do it, but it's still a choice that you make. And there's still mystery about it, I think, is so beautifully done. Mm-hmm. And the way he ties those two things together that seem dichotomous, but aren't necessarily.
That's kind of why, like you said, like the portrayal of her, like the Rosario Dawson playing her. Like, I think what is awesome too is that the character, by the end of Rebels, we know that she, like, she's evolved from what we see in the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. And I think it's awesome to see Rosario Dawson's portrayal of her, because she's adding something new to the character. She's not just doing, like, a mimic of the Clone Wars character. She's not doing a mimic mm-hmm. of how we see her in Rebels. Like, we're seeing Ahsoka in a new light as well. And, like, she's, like, we're seeing her as a Jedi, which is very, like, a full form. Like, she's, like, she knows her mission. She knows what to do. We're seeing, like, her ultimate form, if you will. Like, and that was super exciting to see, because it didn't just play on what we know the character as. It also, like, we were learning new things. It's like, oh, yeah, she knows the responsibility of the Jedi. She knows, like, how to communicate, mm-hmm. how to train. Like, all the lessons that she has gotten, we got to see the mm-hmm. payoff of.
And it feels like that time has passed. Yes. It's been, what, like at least 30 years since the last time we saw her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In Rebels.
End of Rebels is the last time that she's been in any story in terms of timeline from
right,
that point.
Right, so maybe 20 years, somewhere around there.
Yeah. And the way they depict, like, this place in time for the Jedi Order, it's like, this to me is, this is the Jedi Order that I wanted to see, mm-hmm. the Jedi in the vacuum mm-hmm. of the Empire, mm-hmm. where it's like she's kind of like a Ronin, right? Yeah. She's like just yeah. off mm-hmm. like masterless, but she has her code mm-hmm. and she knows to do good, and so she's like floating through the world like a freaking, you know, Ronin samurai or Mad Max or whoever, like the man with no name mm-hmm. in the westerns, like whatever.
But she's more of a purpose than them because of what we find out mm-hmm. at the end of the episode,
right? That's correct. But it was so, so well done. And like, I honestly, like, also, I was into this episode, like, without Ahsoka. Yeah. I think it's a good yes. episode anyway of the show. Like, it's a better episode than last week's and maybe the past 2 weeks, mm-hmm. you know, episodes just on its own with, like, with the story of, you know, the child, Grogu, and Mando. But, like, when you add in all they do with Ahsoka and all that Rosario Dawson brings to it and all the... I love, like, dude, they just have so many, like... He got to have fun with, like, some real money yeah. shots yeah. of, like, her lighting the lightsaber and the glow. Yeah. And, like, Rosario Dawson, she knows... I mean, if nothing else, I think she's a very good actor. Yeah. Mm. But if nothing else, she knows how to look good, like, and hit a pose. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
I think... And also, just the design, I was just like, oh, like, they just did it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just is her.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
There was no... Yep.
It's like, incredible.
My wife mentioned, she was like, I thought, she was like, you know how, like, sometimes they change things to make it live action? She was like, mm-hmm.
like
I thought
Ninja
maybe,
Turtles.
Like, with her tentacles, they would, like, make it look like it was, like, braided hair.
Yeah.
Or, like, something like that. Like, you know, like, one of those, like, X-Men 2000 things where they're like, obviously we're not going to show the actual suits. Like, that right. kind of thing. But it was just her, and it just looked amazing. And the physicality of her was perfect. I love that they had little things like Ahsoka in the animated series has these, she always has this lightness about her, even in the most serious situations. And the amount of times during fights that she is very serious, but kind of just mischievously smiles.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like,
and things like that was so perfect.
When she, like, saved, I mean, when she didn't cut that guy, she kind of, like, gave her the nod.
Oh, my God.
Which was hilarious.
The cut through the bell was the one of the coolest shots.
Yeah.
It
was,
that was amazing.
So rad. It was so, so rad. And I would just say, like, so Rachel, my wife, also, she watched, like, the first 5 minutes with me, and then Hour the Child required
trademark, depending, yeah.
could not sleep through the episode, unfortunately.
You have named for you're us. Upset now because you did name your baby the child, and now you found out that's not the canon yes. name.
But
not,
yeah, I know. Surprise middle name was Grogu.
But that's a coincidence.
Yeah, and that was just that was just a family
wild.
But like even in the first like the first thing Rachel first was like, oh wow. I thought they'd make you wait for it. And then the next thing she said was she was just like, she's perfect. And Rachel's watched maybe, I don't know, half a dozen to 10 episodes of Clone Wars kind of like as I watch them in the background. But she's familiar enough to like really like Ahsoka. She's like, oh, Ahsoka's cool. She's a total badass. And when she saw Rosario Dawson, she was just like, that's her. So it, I mean, I think all the nuance that you're talking about, Ryan, like, it's clear Filoni knew how to direct her to embody this role that he invented, you know? But beyond that, like, all that work also, you know, makes it win for, you know, the layperson, the person who you know, is familiar with Star Wars and maybe knows who Ahsoka is, but, like, can instantly recognize her.
How does that...
It was great.
How does that first 5 minutes play to the layperson who only really watches The Mandalorian and kind of remembers the Star Wars movies? Because I kind of, initially, before we knew that they were bad guys protecting their power of over this town, I was like, whoa, this Jedi is just cutting people down without any thought. And I guess you just assume because they're a Jedi that they must be fighting evil.
Yeah.
You know, because she's pretty...
I think there's...
He doesn't have much concern.
I think probably, but even if not, there is something really interesting about that, Mike, which is, first of all, we're seeing, you know, a Jedi act like it's merciless, right? She's cutting these people down. The lightsabers are white, which is like the neutral, like, it's neither red nor blue,
which
right?
kind of goes with her story. I know none of us are fully caught up, but she exits the Jedi Order.
Yeah, she isn't part of the Order.
She's shrouded in, you know, she's shrouded in darkness and fog and everything. And then she is set up within the episode initially to be, you know, potentially a conflict for Jin Jarin, you know? And so I think there's probably some viewers who watched going, I don't know if we can trust this. Like, she might be bad. If you're completely kind of, for lack of a better word, under a rock, or just someone who hasn't dove into the cartoon series, which is totally fine. Yeah. But man, this episode is so rewarding. And I kept going then after, I didn't watch the episode a second time, but I watched a couple episodes of Clone Wars afterward. And I'm like right in the middle of like a Death Watch arc. So I'm getting like more about Bo-Katan. I'm back with, you know, with Ahsoka. And it's just, what a freaking payoff. And it makes me so happy. In addition to the fans, it makes me so happy for Filoni.
Yeah.
Like,
he got to see his ultimate.
What a freaking cathartic moment this guy is. I mean, like, what a
that's
win.
That's what I mean by fan film. I just mean, like, he was able to take this vision of his Star Wars that he liked, and then now he's like, it's there. Like, he did it. He took, he made Star Wars.
We get it, Chris. You think it looked cheap?
No.
You think it looked like a shot in
those,
the backyard.
Hey, some of those fan films do not look cheap.
Well, no, and what's amazing too,
I'm sorry, Chris. I'm just teasing.
I'm worried now the whole fan film audience is just gonna get eggs thrown at us on the streets.
And I know that I've, defended midichlorians here, but I think what's amazing is that Filoni has been this kind of... shepherd of a new age of Star Wars for a little bit, despite not being that involved in the Disney ones. But he takes Star Wars and he makes it his own without feeling like he needs to fix anything. And that's something that I think that JJ never really got, even though I love The Force Awakens, and I think Rian Johnson did really get, which is that Filoni takes it for everything that it is, and he's not doing this thing where he's like, well, George messed this up, and now I need to, like, undo it. He embraces all of it for what it is, and he takes that and makes it work the best way that he knows how. And I don't mean that in a way that he's, like, course-correcting. I mean that he, if you hear him talk about the prequels, he loves them.
Yeah.
He sees all of the value in them. He sees exactly what George was trying to do, and many of the things that I think George succeeded at. And, I think that that's a beautiful thing. I think that's what's most exciting to me about his storytelling in Star Wars is that he's not doing any kind of course correction.
And he's also not...
He's just adding.
He's also not trying to... I think even... I agree completely what you said about JJ and Rian Johnson. I think even more so than Rian Johnson, Dave Filoni, he doesn't, like, have a thing to prove. Like, he's not trying to prove, like, with a trick or anything. He's not trying to show off at all, too. Which I think is really good for Star Wars, because it just lets the world and the characters speak for themselves. Like, he's not focused on this ultra clever plot or anything like that. It's just kind of like, we're gonna use these characters, we're gonna use these sets, we're gonna use these props, and this universe in the best way we know to, like, honor it. Almost, it comes through that he has a true love for these characters and this world.
Yeah. I feel like if JJ made this series, there'd be a line where someone was like, midichlorians, I thought they found out those were myths.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Like, and they'd right. be like, yeah, no, they found out that there's no such thing.
Or somebody somebody would call her Snips, and she'd be like, don't call me Snips anymore. Like, something like that would happen.
That might happen anyway. Yeah. But I mean, Chris, we don't have to dive in. I don't agree with you on the overly complex story that Ryan was trying to tell, but we can, Ryan Johnson, but we can save that for another episode of the pod. Physicality wise, or actually two things that kind of in the conversations come up to me is both Chris, you and Ryan were talking about the physicality, but also the lightsaber play that we saw in this episode. That wowed me, especially when she first interacts with the Mandalorian, when he's out to find her after he's been given the bounty, even though he's not going to follow through on that. And she makes that flip over the tree. And I just kind of like sat stunned, like, how did that look that good? And it also made me go back and be like, how did the Rise of Skywalker look so bad in the stunts where she was flying?
Flip.
Yeah, that was incredible. Whoa. I loved it. They just, there's something there that Filoni might be, you know, this incredible live action director as well, just after what we've seen here. And I'm just very excited about the future of what potentially could be. He's given us so many great stories and so much great Star Wars already. But what does this mean is kind of the tipping point for him moving into another version of Star Wars. And that's really exciting to me. But again, the physicality that they got right. But then I'm also excited, Sam, you were talking about, you know, experiencing this for the first time if you've not seen Ahsoka before. Now to have watched this episode, how many people are going to have their interest piqued to go back and watch the Clone Wars? How many people are going to dive in to be like, what is her story? Because she is fascinating. And that's really cool to me.
Yeah, like how cool is it that someone's like, who was that? She's cool. And then someone's like, well, there's seven seasons.
Yeah, yeah, you can watch. Yeah, you can watch her whole training. And then five more seasons of kind of the storyline of her as well, if you want to follow up on it. I mean, it's a super rich character, I think, that doesn't get as much credit as she deserves as a character.
I also want to just jump back, though. So I think all of that is, that's a great point and super like exciting for people. I also, just to kind of my other point of the strength of the episode on its own, I really liked the rest of the storyline. I'm curious, like, I'm interested in if I've already encountered the Magistrate in Clone Wars, I don't remember, but if she's to come, I'm excited to meet her.
She was great.
And I was like, I thought that was Michael Biehn, but I wasn't sure.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, you know, for a role that very, very easily could have been played by just about anybody.
Where's,
you know,
my Bosch heads at?
Muscle,
where's my Bosch heads at?
I do think, though, that, like, casting Michael Biehn, like, first of all, I think he brought something to the role where his timing was great. He was funny and, like, kind of, you know, desperate in his own way. But there's also something when you cast the guy from Terminator, from Aliens, this commando, this guy who's known for playing, you know, kind of military hard asses in, like, future wars, and then you say, like, I don't know, something about him seems ex-military to me, it totally reads.
It's
like perfect casting, because all of us, our history with that guy is exactly that. And we look at him and we go, this guy's not just a hired gun. This guy is like a merc. He's like ex-military. He knows some stuff. And so it makes the climax where you've got, you know, Ahsoka versus the Magistrate, I forget her name, and
Morgan
and Mando. Yes, and Mando facing down her lieutenant. It's like there's two really good climaxes happening together, which is exactly what they do in a good Star Wars movie.
By the way, just to answer kind of what you posed, Morgan Elsbeth, I looked it up because I was like, I wonder if she appears earlier, and this is the first appearance of that character.
Oh, okay.
Got it.
I thought played a part in Clone Wars or something. Gotcha. Like, when she said her name, I was like, maybe that's a reveal, but this is the first we've seen her.
I mean, yeah. I thought at first it was Michael Rooker when I just heard the voice and just didn't get quite the eyes on. I would not be surprised if we see Michael Rooker in a follow-up episode of the show. Like,
Michael Biehn casting was like a piece of quote-unquote gimmick casting that I think worked because he was actually good for the part. It's Yeah. This was the better version of like Sylvester Stallone in Guardians of the Galaxy
too. Yeah, exactly.
Where you're just like, wow, this is distracting and gross.
It is funny how almost every episode has that dude's role though. Like sure. I really like that aspect of the show where it's like, well, all right, who's the hired muscle? How is he gonna be like, it's a little cheesy, but like it's okay. It works.
Yeah, like it was like, did they call Peter Weller first?
Yeah, exactly. They have a list. They're like, all right, well.
But I thought Michael Biehn was great.
Yeah, he was good.
Aside, you know, I think it's weird that they dyed his hair like that. But
he's no Bosch. He's no Bosch, but
I think I truly just like thought his delivery in that like final moment. Yeah. It was like so perfect when he like the way they wrap up his character, which is very kind of minor for the episode. But you know, it's like, I guess your guy won. And he kind of like makes like he's laying down his gun, and then it gives Mando just that absolute boss moment of like knowing the score well in advance. Like no matter how clever Michael Biehn thinks he's being, there's just like no way he's getting this pat. Like when it's such a great timed shot, you know.
When that moment happened, I was like, wait a second, this is a Western.
I was gonna make the joke at the beginning of the episode. I was gonna say, you know, guys, I always kind of thought Star Wars was like more of a Western, but this made me think it might have had some like samurai influence.
The samurai,
like,
I thought for a split second, similar to the first episode of this season. Remember how I think who was it, Ryan? You also had the glimmer of a thought, like, is that it? Is it, or was it Mike that like, oh, Mando's gonna die and it's gonna be passed over to Timothy Oliphant?
Yeah.
I had for a split second of, is that it? The child's gonna be passed to Ahsoka, and now it's her show. Like,
yeah,
I had the glimmer in my head, and I was like, ah. So
the only downside to this for me, and I love like the character of the Mandalorian, but I was like, well, next week I'll be bummed because she won't be in it.
Well, but I think next week I'll be bummed because it won't be about what we just figured out in just the lore of Star Wars and the Jedi and what he could be and whether or not he should be trained and everything that they had in the conversation. Is I'll enjoy another adventure quest, and I'll enjoy him making his way to eventually what I assume will be Ahsoka returning to be the Jedi that shows up at the temple that she alluded to. I think it'll be her. Mm. I think that now we've opened ourselves up to a larger world. Ooh, and
I'm just like dreading that. The plot synopsis back next week of like, when the Mandalorian needs to infiltrate a caravan transporting fathers.
But a fish monster eats them all every 10 hours, so they have to blow that up.
And I'll be like, oh, great. No,
Can we talk about, though, how this episode was shot? I mean, it's the same director of photography, I believe, for most episodes of the Mandalorian. Was it Boz? Boz Iodine, something like that, his last
Bosch
name.
Lerman.
Not Iodine.
Boz Lerman?
Boz Lerman.
Bosch Lerman.
But the way this was shot, I thought was beautiful. But the other thing that's really stood out to me, and we talked about it earlier this season, is that I think the volume has dissolved. I don't notice it.
Yep.
I think the scale and the way they built this, I know they probably just built one strip of town the way that they had for so much else of the Tatooine set or the Mos Pelgos set. But yet it felt like this was a cinematic episode to me.
You could only tell sometimes when there's like crowd shots and you're like, hey, there's like 10 people there, like cheering.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
I mean, I actually felt like this one, it in no way detracted from the episode. And I felt it more this one, but I haven't felt it unlike previous episodes when you guys have. So I think the low light
day for night kind of stuff doesn't work out as well with the volume. I've noticed like those some of the episodes that they did day for night last season, I could tell like there's like a weird gloss over them, like the lighting is,
well, that's why I think this season is a lot better, with the exception of like the opening scene of the first episode.
They perfected it, that technique, a little more, which is good.
I might have to watch. I haven't watched the like behind the scenes thing from that they did, which I should watch, like that, whatever that series was, just to see if I can actually pick it out better. But like I know what we're talking about when we talk about the volume. I know how the show is shot, like in general, you know. And for me, this one, because I actually feel like, because it was in like kind of open forest areas, where I was like, oh, this feels very much like there's like two trees and then a bunch of
digital
matte painting trees or whatever.
I was the opposite. Projected. Those were the scenes where I was like, man, this looks great. Mm-hmm. They did a great job of meshing it all together. I really thought that looked wonderful. And Sam, you're a contrarian. You always are.
I want to be clear. Did they say it didn't work at the start? Like it worked. It worked just fine. Like I thought the episode looked beautiful throughout, and I loved that it was darker and that there were these like soft glow things where you could kind of barely make out faces and stuff. Like I loved all that. I guess I'm a contrarian.
John Favreau was just a director before, and then he single-handedly created this piece of technology.
I thought for a moment he spent a lot of hours in his basement building this thing. Like, John, what are you doing down there? I constantly do this in Star Wars, especially any new material. I constantly try to think, is this one of the planets we've been to, and is it going to be like a fun reveal? I thought for a moment we were on Dagobah, because it was kind of swampy. Everything was foggy, and it has the lore and legend with Yoda, and I thought like that would make sense for Ahsoka to be in Dagobah, like somehow made it there to find something in Yoda's house.
We had scenes that were reminiscent of Dagobah, without a doubt, but it's now, I think everybody's, not everybody, but it's like three times now that we've had the hermited Jedi, you know, and I don't know that we got the sense that she is only on that planet.
Right.
She seemed to be making it for the mission, but I get what you're saying, because especially in the whole conversation between them about what to do with Grogu, it felt not only a thing that I loved, and I love what Ludwig has done. I do think he's been a little less prominent in some of his music this season, but part of that is probably just the first time through.
I'm going to pull out the old disagree card on that.
Well,
because,
let me finish before I get to that.
Don't worry about disagreeing with Mike. He's wrong a lot.
Well, I want to say, I can't help but tip my Loathcat, because we saw Loathcat in this episode twice. I'm going to tip my Loathcat over to good old Ludwig for the moment that he played the same theme as Yoda looks at Luke trying to lift the X-Wing on Dagobah, when they say that she knew another of his kind.
Yep.
Loved
it. Yeah, he did a very good job. Even the last two episodes when he got the X-Wing, I forget the name of that song for X-Wing, Scherzo for X-Wing, he kind of worked that into last week's episode. And in this week's episode, he got the Jedi theme in there, real sneaky, but then he adds his own little tinge to it. I think he's been crushing it with thematically pulling out those melodies, but then still keeping them in that weird kind of thing.
There's also a moment, and like I can't confirm this, but she's speaking to Grogu, or like, you know, mind speaking to Grogu, and she picks him up and the moon's behind them. There's like that very striking shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't prove this, but I swear I really think that he did a musical reference to the E.T. theme. There's like three notes that sound very much like it. I think it was just a tiny little homage.
It's when Grogu's going, Elliot. Home.
We should also acknowledge that we've talked about this episode for, you know, close to 30 minutes now, and we like haven't even acknowledged that we get like two huge reveals, which is one that like Baby Yoda is able to communicate like silently and like through the Force with other Force users, and has like been able to communicate presumably this whole time. And secondly, he's got a name, and it's Grogu, and like we haven't even really just talked about how perfect that name is.
Also, he was at the Jedi Temple in Coruscant.
Yes.
And was trained.
And Thrawn.
Wait, but I do want to say, before we leave the name, I love the name, but Sam, I just want to be part of that conversation where the creative team came to the marketing retail people to say, his name's Grogu. Grogu. We have to put Grogu in all our marketing? Yeah, he's Grogu from now on.
Wait, then. I can't imagine. Of course. Why would that be hard? If you're a marketing person and working for Star Wars, like at this point,
the retail product people. I'm not talking about marketing Star Wars. I'm talking about the people who have to do the products, who don't actually probably care about Star Wars, but make the actual products and market the products. Those people, I think, are the ones who are like, you know, they're not going to be part of the, and I'm not saying Grogu is that weird, but they're not part of the like Star Wars fan base that is more regularly prepared for this kind of thing.
They're like, why didn't you tell us before Christmas?
It's not a cute name.
They're like, well, I think it is.
Part of it.
I was like, they'd probably be like, why didn't you tell us this before Christmas? We could have sold 10 million more Grogu's.
But I love the name Grogu, but I just envision it as like, there are the people who are all about this, and then there are people who hear something like Yoda or Trandoshan, and they're like, oh, that's terrible.
I'm sure there's lots of listeners that don't want to have to say the word Grogu.
Well, I actually look forward to conversations with because you got to think about it, is like, you're trying to sell this stuff, you need to sell it to the most broad audience possible. So I want to talk to somebody's aunt who watches The Mandalorian, who's like, they're like, Baby Yoda, and I'll be like, Grogu? Mean Grogu? Don't say Baby Yoda, it's Grogu.
Also, the Star Wars set does have these like attachment points, which are kind of fun, and it's like, I'm not going to say it's like a fan filter, but it's different levels of fandom, and sometimes people love, like us, we love those levels of details, but for a lot of people, Baby Yoda's fine.
Yeah.
You know, Baby Yoda actually has a name, it's the child, and then people are, now there's like a third layer to it, which is kind of fun.
I actually think a lot of people, in those marketing conversations, they probably just said, most people will still call him Baby Yoda anyway, so whatever you want to call it, just call it that.
I
think if you've already gotten over the hump of like putting Yoda and Chewbacca on your packaging, you're fine with putting Grogu on the packaging. I hear what you're saying.
I'm not talking Yoda's about the parents. People who already love Star Wars. I'm talking about the way down the chain.
Yeah, and I'm saying like those people probably are like, Chewbacca's stupid, but you see, it makes stupid money. So, like, Grogu sounds awesome. Yeah. They're like, sounds
not
good to me.
On the original packaging, it said dog person for Chewbacca.
Yeah, that's right.
So, pretty wild.
But, Sam, let's talk about the other reveals, because not only do we know that, but he's been communicating. And and as you talked about, Ryan, the history, you know, he's... Maybe the egg scene is a bit different now because he's clearly much more mentally evolved than we thought.
He just likes to eat other species of aliens.
He's still a child for, you know, his species.
Yeah.
He's 50 years old. But and this goes again to Filoni, is that, one, she references Anakin in this directly. Mm-hmm. I know she doesn't say Anakin because it would mean nothing to him. But
that was the scene that hit me so hard.
It was so great.
Oh, yeah.
And then she talks about how he was raised on Coruscant, that the thing that I said, and my wife is very kind to just kind of hear my ramblings as these happen, is that she looks at at Grogu and she says, like, I hope we're going to talk about him.
Yeah.
And I just said out loud, I was like, she's the only one who knew Yoda.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, she knew him. And like, so it would strike her immediately. But
wouldn't she know Grogu, though? If he's 50 years old and been trained at the Jedi Temple.
The weirdest thing about that is, on like the packaging and in canon, they always say Yoda is the only known of Yoda's species. Their origin is unknown. But then we see a Yaddle, and now we see a Grogu.
Well, so some of the things have been updated.
Yeah, seems like, I guess it's just another alien in the scheme of things.
She says, her line is, I've seen what such feelings can do to a fully trained Jedi Knight, to the best of us.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'd like that's, that just like which crushes is, when that's you think like of like
Obi-Wan,
all
like
that history.
Obi-Wan wisdom coming down, like, I've seen what's happened.
And she says that because in Grogu, she senses great fear based on what he's experienced. Yeah. And it's like,
that's what fear does.
Oh my god. We have suddenly given something beyond beyond a cute MacGuffin.
Mm-hmm.
We have given this character that is so adorable and instantly has like a personality based on its look now has a life.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's so rich in history that now I'm like, I want to see all of that show. You know?
And
like,
you know,
it's good.
Another thing that I love about this, with the way that he ties in the prequels, is that there's no meta level to it. No. Like, there's no irony about it. Again, and I don't want to, like, pick on JJ, but I feel like if someone like JJ was to be making this show and she referenced Anakin, there would be, like, some thing where it's, like, the best of us. I mean, a little whiny, but still the best. You know, something like that acknowledges how we, the audience, have apparently felt about
nod,
these people.
Yep.
Yeah, how we are cool, even though, like, we... like, we like it, but, like, we know it's kind of geeky.
Right, like, that's the thing, is that Filoni has no sense.
No.
Filoni doesn't put forth any sense of, like, of being, like, it's cool to not like these things, or of, like, apologizing for them.
He didn't spend hours playing the Star Wars role-playing game for nothing. he's in that world, I agree. Yeah, he's not,
Sam,
he's not poking out the hokiness.
I got to go back to what you were talking about, because it really stands out to me, because the moment where she says that and talks about the best of us and the fear that took him down, I was just thinking, what has Star Wars taught us? What have we learned in the story since Anakin Skywalker that presumably Ahsoka doesn't know, because she wasn't around Luke and wasn't around Yoda during their time where they were together, is that the fear shouldn't be just pushed aside and said, let's not train you. That even though Yoda was apprehensive and hesitant to train him, he did end up training him. That what we should find is that though there's that fear there, to say that that means you shouldn't access the Force connection to this character isn't the way that the story should go, and isn't this way I expect the story to go. And I found that as, like, it's mirroring what we have seen before, but also we've learned in these other stories that that fear doesn't necessarily mean that you should shut yourself off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's her arc. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, I think that's fascinating. Yeah. I didn't even get into that level of thinking. I picked up on the age thing, you know, which was like something that obviously Luke
Of course.
Disproved.
But that
idea of him being too old was interesting.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, because she's acknowledging his fear and she's exposing her own.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
that's really, I didn't think of that either. That's a beautiful observation about that. That it's thematically rhyming.
Yeah.
You're seeing the same thing just happen to people over and over again.
It gave me goosebumps.
It's like poetry. It rhymes.
It gave me goosebumps during that scene. Also, to think about, from her perspective, she knows that Darth Vader had just died. Like, she knows Anakin's fate. Mm. Spoiler alert. So she knows, she, like, she has that knowledge, though.
Spoiler, like, dear listener.
So she has that knowledge, knowing that her master turned evil is now gone. And, like, she has to live with that. Like, there was no fate that they would have been, like, she's just sad. I assume very sad.
Well, I agree with you, Chris, but I feel like she might have treated it the way that Obi-Wan and others did, is like, Anakin Skywalker died long ago. My friend has been gone for so many years.
I thought was so great that kind of ties thematically into this in terms of things happening over and over again was she says something where she says, like, the Jedi have been gone for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And he responds, so is the Empire, but they're still hunting him.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And I was like, that's so perfect.
Yeah.
It's like all of Star Wars. It's like she's saying that, like, the good is like, you know, she's saying the good is gone, and he's saying, how could the good be gone if the evil's still here? And you know, that idea of balance, where, like, in this strange way he's saying something pessimistic, but underneath it there's an optimistic thing, which he's saying, like, the bad guys were also supposed to be gone, so why am I to believe that the good guys are gone also?
Guys, I'm thinking that, like, this Filoni guy's a good writer for Star Wars.
Ryan, I thought you were going to say thematically the thing that you were going to, that kept reoccurring, was just a stick made out of Beskar.
Here's what I'm thinking, genuinely. I think we hit on this kind of half jokingly, but I'm becoming convinced. I think that in some way, to, like, I think to save Grogu in this season, I think this is a hot and fresh prediction.
Wow. Here we go.
Stealing it this week. Great.
I think to save Grogu, Din Djarin is going to have to give up his Beskar armor, and we're going to have to see him. Like, I think they're going to move the series to, like, where he's unmasked.
Interesting.
More. A so that they get more out of the lead actor, and you know, in Pedro Pascal. But also, I think that it's like. Like, last season, they made a big deal about, like, okay, Beskar is, like, you know, really precious, and it's what they make their armor out of, and we saw the armorer work with it when he, like, got that big haul. And then that was it. Mm-hmm. He just had cool armor that we knew was really good. It has been referenced In every episode, multiple times of people going like, that armor, Beskar, huh? Must be expensive. And it's like, well, okay. So you're setting up this whole season. The most precious thing to him is his armor. And I think they're going to like strip him of it. That's my prediction.
I like it. The motivation of the armor is also pretty cool in the fact that Mandalorians and Jedi were constantly warring. And the Mandalorian armor is what can take a lightsaber blade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, that was awesome.
Do we know that? Which,
I did not remember or know that.
I thought we knew that from Clone Wars.
That I was going to say, I assume that from Clone
Wars. Or Rebels.
Yeah. Where it was like, and that's why like things like the Darksaber are so important as well. Because they're like weapons that can defeat Jedi weapons, basically. But I love that we got to see that detail.
The brief, I'm so glad it didn't last a long time, but the brief fight between them, where like literally it was what Batman v Superman should have been, where it's like they started fighting and then just were like, wait, Martha, we're on the same side. And like that could have been the movie. But like when they had that scene and you briefly saw them like each kind of like take a shot at one another.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch that on loop in my brain for 6 months.
It's like, also the first time we've heard him sound kind of rattled.
Yes.
Like he kind of like yells, he's like, Ahsoka Tano, like, please stop.
Yeah.
Which is like not something we've seen him do.
Yeah.
He has her.
Well, because
he
and it makes sense because
her, yeah.
Because it makes so much sense because we know that he should have the confidence by being a Mandalorian and because of the success that he's had, that in most situations he's going to be the most lethal person, the best fighter there is.
But
and he's never gone up against a Jedi. And now he clearly
One second when he had the blaster out, I thought he was going to like fire a warning shot basically, and I thought it would have been awesome if she paused the warning shot.
Oh, that would have been cool.
It's been done, what a great callback is that Morgan Elsbeth says, like, you know that Jedi were like sworn enemies of Mandalorian, something to that effect. So they establish that early in the episode, and then at the end when she gives him the spear, she says, like, this belongs with the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Which just tells us so much. If you don't know anything about Ahsoka, like, we know as fans, but tells us so much about her, like, place and her perspective. That she is not, she has spent time with Mandalorians. Yes. Like, she has been friends with Mandalorians. Like, she knows their way. She is not the sworn enemy of them.
Well, also, how great was, I also truly got, like, I got so excited. Like, my blood started pumping when he was, like, with that line that he has where he's like, they'll never see it coming. It was, like, it was such a great setup where it was just like, oh, my God. Like,
together?
In a million years, these two would never predict. the enemies would never predict that these two could find a truce.
Yes.
And so it's like, it just made me so excited for whatever was going to happen. And it paid off. It totally paid off. But it was just like, he's like, they'll never see it coming. And I was like, oh, I can't wait for them to raid the shit
and then,
out of these
And then
people.
We get brilliant, like, brilliant visual depictions of that. Like that when Michael Bean is looking at the Mandalorian and there's that amazing shot.
But it was focused
where he's in the
foreground
and Ahsoka's in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that and was just that like, felt like it was pulled directly out of a Clone Wars episode. Ugh. Like, I just,
This episode made my heart soar with the eagle's nest.
I almost felt like some of the action in the beginning of the episode reminded me of, like, even the pre-CGI animated Clone Wars cartoon. Like, what's his name?
Jendi Tartakovsky one?
Yeah. Like, the action sequences were so epic and, like, kind of quiet almost.
How do I watch that, by the way?
I think it's tough.
I lend you a DVD.
Yeah, you have to go to Best Buy in 2005 and buy a DVD.
I have it.
So why did that happen? Why don't they have
it? I'll mail it to you.
It bothers me. Why don't they have that?
It's really cool.
Disney
it's
Plus.
Almost silent. It's like most of Jendi Tartakovsky's stuff, it's almost dialogue-less. Yeah.
I'm
just like, put it on D plus.
Look, as we talk about dialogue though, was anybody else thinking, and maybe this is just because I'm thinking of Maul and the way he says Kenobi in the Clone Wars and Rebels, but when she said Thrawn, I was waiting for a much bigger like Thrawn.
So
my name is Thrawn.
The fact that she's looking for Thrawn would to me indicate she's still like on her Ezra mission.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I was trying to kind of place what she was doing, like where if she would be in the timeline. And if that's the case, that's like so many years.
Do we think they're casting a Thrawn right now?
And it begs the question, is Freddie Prinze Jr. going to show up in this?
Is he ready?
No, he's dead. Oh, spoiler alert. Well, Sam, you've read all the Thrawn books.
Enough days have passed, yeah. Enough
times. You've read the Thrawn, or three of them. Do we know Thrawn clearly doesn't die in those books? We don't know where he was during any of the original trilogy timeline, right?
And my other question.
Do they explain it? I don't remember if they explain like where he.
Come on,
I don't remember if they explain where he was, but other than like an Imperial officer of some note. But they also, I believe those books obviously like became legends with the Disney acquisition.
But they did. I thought they brought him back.
But then Timothy Zahn has written new Thrawn books that are canon.
Thrawn was in Rebels, right?
Yeah. And he was in Rebels, yeah. And so I think they...
I don't know if those are continuous, though.
Well, that's the thing. Rebels ends right before A New Hope. So do we know Thrawn's whereabouts at all after A New Hope or before A New Hope?
Yeah, but we do. I won't give.
I think he was drumming.
Yeah,
on
don't spoil. Don't spoil any more of Rebels. I'm looking forward to watching it. Mike,
sorry about that. My only question for Thrawn is, why so blue?
Oh boy. You know what's funny? We're 50 minutes into this podcast. Yeah. Didn't we feel like about after 15 minutes of the last podcast episode, we were like, all right, I think we've pretty much covered it.
I'll say about this week's episode, and this is going to be my final thought, I promise I won't say another word after this, is that, you know, Gina Carano is a hell of a director.
Wait a second.
You know, and actually, Ryan, it's funny. I agree with you. It was really nice to just kind of figure out and see who wrote and directed the episode at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I remember in my Lost days and when I was watching Lost live as it played out, and it was like, oh, this is written by Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse. I'm like, I know I'm in for it. I know I'm in for a great episode. And so I guess I prefer, I don't know what I prefer. Maybe I would prefer next time to know I'm going into a Filoni episode. Yeah. Maybe.
Perhaps. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. It all made sense when you saw his name at the end.
I just don't understand why we need Jon Favreau at all at this point.
I don't either.
I truly agree with
you. The fact that it said, the fact that, and we talk about this all the time, the fact that at the end of this episode, it said directed by Dave Filoni, written by Dave Filoni, and it was basing around a character created by Dave Filoni, and then it said, created by Jon Favreau. Based on Star Wars by George Lucas. That part I have no problem with. Obviously it is. But the fact that it was like, these are half of the characters were created by Dave Filoni. The other ones created by George Lucas. The Mandalorian, I understand the titular Mandalorian, possibly created by Jon Favreau. But the fact that it says, written and directed by Dave Filoni, created by Jon Favreau, is insane. Look, you know what? Contacting the WGA and figuring out an arbitration.
Ryan, I think what they're referencing is a Cubano sandwich that was made on set.
Oh my God. Yeah.
By Jon Favreau.
Look, I also throw that in there. Grogu is a creation of Dave Filoni. He's not a creation of Jon Favreau. I'm just saying.
Jon Favreau apparently takes credit for it, and that might be true.
Look back to the Clone Wars, and what was it, the movie before the series began? I mean, Grogu is certainly inspired by Baby Jabba.
I think that... Here's what I think is interesting still about like Favreau's ongoing involvement. I think Favreau had the idea of like, here's how I do a live-action Star Wars. I do Lone Wolf and Cub with a Mandalorian. And it's like... That kernel of an idea, like, is very full of possibility and very fruitful. And he seems very keen. Like, I do think they have different sensibilities about what they are drawn to in Star Wars. I think Favreau is the guy who's like, Star Wars is a Western. I love that. I love the old, like, you can do cowboys and aliens. You can do, like, these, like, cinematic nods to, like, you know, Western movies and Kurosawa stuff, and like you can have like he likes that sandbox, the like sort of like scoundrels and bounty hunters and like tough guys with guns area, and I think that's I think that has worked really well in the show. I've liked those episodes. And I think that Filoni brings, you know, the authentic sort of like true like Star Wars authorial voice at this point. Mm-hmm. That is, I Ryan, when you said like, you described the depiction of Ahsoka in this episode as uncompromised. And I would say, first of all, that perfectly distilled how I felt. Like, that was what I was looking for in terms of like how to say it. But also, I think that this episode like depicted Star Wars uncompromised.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like this, yeah. This episode, not to be hyperbolic about it, this episode had everything.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like it had every.
I mean,
had
it didn't
the Western
have any
element.
Wars
it had the Kurosawa
in the
stuff.
Star. But you know, had everything but Star Wars.
It did reference them. It referenced it referenced that she was building fleets. That's how Morgan Elsbeth had like made her. You know what joking. I mean? It literally did have all of it.
Yeah. And speaking of the genre stuff, right? And this is welcome to Filoni cast. This is what I think Filoni gets right. That I think other filmmakers kind of become obsessed with. That I think is the less interesting thing. Is that like. The Favreau episodes that he kind of that he wrote and things like this, like the Oliphant episode and things like that, it's so obsessed with being a genre within Star Wars.
Yeah.
Star Wars is a Western, like that whole thing, or Star Wars is a samurai movie. Where when I watch a Filoni thing, all of those things are there. Obviously, there's a quick draw shootout in this, but it's not like he's like, I really want to direct a Western and I'm making a Star Wars show.
Yes.
So I'm going to make it literally a one-to-one where someone walks into a town and it's like literally a cowboy walks into a saloon.
You get a shot of whiskey.
Yeah. It's I think that there's an obsession with a lot of the filmmakers who grew up on Star Wars, like Favreau, JJ, blah, 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 that they need to make it like the genres that Star Wars drew from. Yeah. And I think what Filoni knows, it's that Star Wars is its own genre and that there could be elements of other genres in there. But when I watch the Clone Wars, I'm like, this is singular. This is a Star Wars story. Of course, there are, you know, military or war episodes. There are samurai episodes. There are Western episodes. But it is not like completely obsessed with this idea of like matching the aesthetic of what we see as the movies of those genres.
He's not chasing the magic of the experience when he was a little kid. He is.
Yeah.
He is. This was established. I got to live in this world as probably in his youth. And then like he, it just the timing of his Star Wars existence when there was kind of just like the dark times when there was no Star Wars stuff for like 10 years, really. It was just kind of games and card games and whatever George Lucas would stamp yes on. That was Star Wars. So he was kind of left to his own devices during this time, I have to imagine, to come up with the stories that he wanted to tell and the things that he thought would be awesome. And now he gets to do it.
Guys, I think Filoni might be the heir apparent to George Lucas. Has anybody said that before? Anybody said anything like that before?
It's like that tweet we mentioned. I wish I could attribute it, but... you know, where someone said, like, J.J. Abrams likes the movie Star Wars and Rian Johnson loves Star Wars.
Yes.
Yep. And to me, it's like Dave Filoni is Star Wars.
Yes.
Like,
yes. He is a Star Wars.
Yeah, that's the third statement.
Beat, yes. He will bring
like, and by Star Wars, I mean Dave Filoni is Star Wars.
He just completely embraces it, not for what he wishes it was or what it used to be, but for what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it, you know, for my money, he's the most exciting person telling Star Wars stories.
He brought balance to the Force.
Like, you know, in terms of like that uncompromised vision that was presented, I mean, the confidence of his, you guys talked about it in his direction, like at like the sort of skill and technical craft of direction, but just like the confidence with which he so fully presented Ahsoka Tano, the confidence with which he like dove right into like how this woman was war profiteering and that he's like, I'm gonna have these weird like essentially like electric ring crucifixes like and stuff. Like they're just like it was just so confident and like bold and like a statement of like to put it the way you just did, it's like this is what Star Wars is. Like it wasn't saying like this is what I think it is or this is what we like about it or this calls back to what we remember it being. It was like, no, here it is. This is Star Wars now. And I know you're going to love it because Star Wars is always awesome.
And he's been doing it for over a decade. Like, he's been building this out for over a decade. And I think I talked about it maybe on one of the podcasts before and even recently with some friends. You know, there's so much that you can pull from for Marvel from the comic books and then bring it to the big stage, the movies. And now it's like Dave Filoni is pulling from his own work and bringing it to the live action stage. And it's this great source of here's what worked, here's what didn't work, here's what storyline we want to continue to tell. And it really, I think, is paying dividends for Star Wars right now. But as you said, he's worked through so much, and he's got these stories that he now lives himself and that he brings to all of us. I mean, I don't know that there's a better person, as we said, maybe Rian Johnson, to be shepherding Star Wars.
I was going
to
say, he also, something Rian Johnson introduced to Star Wars, at least from my perspective, was that this idea that there's like the war profiteers off of the Star Wars, which like is something I never thought about outside of like just the good guys make the good guys ships, the bad guys make the bad guys ships. And I love that we had like a little nod to that kind of storytelling, because that's like a very modern, complex thing to speak about, is like, yeah, there's like this weird middle ground of people just making money off all this stuff. Star Wars got a little political.
It's always been political.
I know,
Chris. Always.
I know, I'm just teasing. I think that's why that's great, though, and I love that he embraced that element. I thought that was a cool touch.
Where do we go from here? We've talked for a lot about this episode. I think in our next podcast, we'll
Ahsoka
obviously...
Ahsoka spinoff show.
Exactly.
It's the only place to go.
I swear,
it's
the
only
the
place
next to episode go. Has the word caravan in the synopsis.
But I mean, sadly, I think we all, the way that we...
If it has the words Cara Dune in the synopsis, I'm out.
As Mando is trapped in a hallway...
with a guy in blue jeans. We didn't even talk about that yet. But I think... You know, as we have to be ready for that disappointment next week, guys. I just have to tell you, I felt like I was preparing for a disappointment of the Rise of Skywalker for over 2 years, and you know, I wasn't even ready for that. So just be ready for this to be a letdown the next episode. But where do we go from here? I think we're gonna have to save that for another pod in the conversation that we'll have, that we can probably get to pretty quickly after, if we have a Favreau episode next week, we can just talk about that. But hopefully, this is the beginning of a whole lot more of what Filoni will bring to Star Wars live action television and maybe a movie someday. I think that's going to do it for this edition of the pod. There's so much more to talk about. We've had so much to think about. We're going to go back and stew on this more. Some of us are going to watch it again for a second time. Imagine, Ryan, you've got at least one more in you before next week, because we got to watch this many times.
Yeah.
And it is so wonderful to experience Star Wars executed beautifully by someone who cares deeply about Star Wars. Guys, this is a great day. Just a wonderful day to watch Star Wars.
Dave Filoni's doing the Lord's work.
There it is. It's the best day since December whatever, 2017.
I gotta tell you, I of course in the presidential election voted for Biden Harris, but it's a good thing that this episode didn't air before the election, because I may have written in Filoni.
Filoni Ahsoka.
Well, let's leave it there, guys. So much fun to talk about great Star Wars with you. This has been The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw.
Annie?
You'll never see it coming.
Grogu.
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 Grogu. Gaga.